Hey everyone, it's R.R. Campbell, your host of the listener-supported R.R. Campbell Writescast, checking in before this episode begins to share some exciting news. My debut novel, Accounting for It All, is to be published with Nine Star Press in November of 2018. Accounting for It All is the story of adult film star turned accountant Robin Weathers, who must evade an IRS investigation into a money laundering scheme to which she was unwittingly a part. Oh, and the woman Robin's always considered to be the love of her life? Yeah, she's back in the picture, finally ready to try to make things work. For more about Accounting for It All, you can visit rrcampbellwrites.com/books. That's rrcampbellwrites.com/books. I look forward to sharing Robin's story with all of you in November 2018. All right, time for your regularly scheduled programming. Thanks for listening. The point of view with which we choose to work in a given manuscript has a tremendous effect on the story's presentation. If we choose wisely and then couple it with a voice that pops off the page, we've put ourselves and our readers in a great position to understand and truly connect with our characters, their worlds, and the adventures we set them on. Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, and welcome to Biblio Breakdown Episode 2 here on the Writescast Network. If you're new to Biblio Breakdowns, here's how they work. We examine a given book from the perspective of a writer, with an emphasis on examining the book's structure, characterization, concept, and more. In so doing, it's our goal to better understand how other writers are tackling these in their own work, and then let that inform our own writing as we see fit. I'll also offer a few writing exercises along the way to get us thinking more critically about the topics we cover. In this episode, we're exploring point of view and voice in Mohsin Hamid's Exit West. If you haven't read Exit West, there's no need to worry. I'll provide whatever context might be necessary along the way to make sure we're all in a position to learn as much as possible from the lessons this book has in store. With that in mind, let's get familiar with the book as a whole before we begin an analysis of point of view and voice in Exit West. The following is taken from the book blurb. In a country teetering on the brink of civil war, two young people meet. Sensual, fiercely independent Nadia and gentle, restrained Saeed. They embark on a furtive love affair and are soon cloistered in a premature intimacy by the unrest roiling their city. When it explodes, turning familiar streets into a patchwork of checkpoints and bomb blasts, they begin to hear whispers about doors. Doors that can whisk people far away, if perilously and for a price. As the violence escalates, Nadia and Saeed decide that they no longer have a choice. Leaving their homeland and their old lives behind, they find a door and step through. If that sounds fascinating, that's because it is. Biblio Breakdowns aren't meant to be recommendations or book reviews, but if you can get your hands on a copy of this book, I definitely recommend you do so. All right, it's breakdown time. Let's dive into point of view in Mohsin Hamid's Exit West. Let's begin with a brief discussion on point of view, just to ground ourselves in it more broadly. As writers, there are four points of view, or POVs, that we can choose from, namely first, second, third person limited, and third person omniscient. The first of these is, well, first person, which manifests itself on the page through I statements. That is to say, our protagonist is referring to themselves as I, as if they're relaying the story's contents directly to the reader. And they are, in fact. They're our story's narrator. The benefits of the first-person perspective include greater intimacy between our protagonist and the reader, and it also lends itself well to ensuring a character's voice shines on the page, but we'll have more on that later. Then there's the second-person point of view, wherein the book refers to the protagonist as, quote, you. Think of those choose-your-own-adventure books, for example. They might describe a scene where you get trapped at a haunted carnival and you must make decisions that affect your ability to escape. Rather than employ a character name, you, dear reader, are the main character. The second-person perspective need not be limited to choose-your-own-adventure books, but it is employed with great rarity if for no reason other than it does begin to read stiffly or instructional after a while. At least that's how I see it, anyway. We then find ourselves with the third-person perspectives, those being limited or omniscient. In the third-person perspectives, the protagonist is not necessarily our narrator. It's as if the events are being described by someone who's watching them unfold. If we have a main character named Katya, for example, typical sentence structure might look something like, Katya enters the room, as opposed to, I enter the room, or, you enter the room. The difference between limited and omniscient variations of the third person is that in the third person limited, we're only privy to the inner thoughts, feelings, and machinations of a single character. When we're writing third person omniscient, we, or perhaps rather the narrator, has access to the thoughts and feelings of all characters at any given time. So where does Mohsin Hamid's Exit West come into play? Well, right here, in fact, as we explore the book's use of the third person omniscient. Personally, I tend to steer clear of the third-person omniscient in my own work as I feel it limits opportunities for creating a sense of mystery and suspense on the page. If we're in the know about every character's thoughts and feelings at any given time, there are, if you'll permit me an oversimplification, fewer opportunities for moments of surprise wherein a character, and therefore the reader, discovers, for example, that their best friend's forgetfulness surrounding their birthday was just an elaborate ruse to make the surprise party they planned all the more surprising. If we as readers knew what the best friend's intentions were all along, then we'd lack the mystery and suspense necessary to push us forward, and the surprise party would, for us anyway, not be much of a surprise at all. One could argue that it's possible to write in third-person omniscient and still maintain the mystery and suspense in a scene like this by just not letting the narrator relay certain information to the readers. But yeah, that's possible. All the same, though, doesn't that feel like a cop-out? In my view, writing an omniscient point of view and then selectively withholding information from readers takes power away from our characters and puts it in the hands of the author, which, though perhaps a power-tripping ego boost, doesn't always serve our story well, at least compared to the alternatives. So what, again, does this have to do with Exit West? Well, despite my qualms with the third-person omniscient more generally, I actually find Exit West to be a standout example of what this point of view can offer readers. In order to avoid any accusation of being withholding, Mohsin Hamid goes for full-on, no-doubt-about-it omniscience. That is to say, we get to know what both of our perspective characters are thinking and feeling, even if we don't get to know it immediately. Granted, upon hearing that, one might make the argument that not knowing things immediately is inherently withholding. After all, if the point of omniscience is to get to know who's thinking what right when they're thinking it, not passing along any of that information right away sounds awfully similar to the cop-out I mentioned hardly a minute ago. Though there is a degree of truth to that, we have to take into account that the presentation of content in a novel is, given the nature of the medium itself, linear. When I say linear, I don't necessarily mean chronological, but rather that our ideas are presented one after another after the next, so we're limited to only truly presenting the thoughts and feelings of one given character, or a group of like-minded characters, at a single point in time. Though this linear presentation feels like a limitation, Mohsin Hamid uses it to his advantage countless times throughout Exit West. The most prevalent examples of this, I feel, are when he spends short spurts inside Saeed's head, expressing his doubts and his concerns about his relationship with Nadia. The questions he raises put us on the same page as Saeed, and they help foment a strong sense of suspense since the answers to those questions aren't known to the reader in the moment they're asked. Then, however, Hamid uses that suspense as fuel to push us into Nadia's thoughts, where we learn she's often thinking along similar lines as Saeed. In fact, sometimes Nadia's thoughts would answer Saeed's questions or quell his doubts if they were voiced out loud, which converts that feeling of suspense readers had earlier into dramatic irony. Readers can now think to themselves, "Oh, Saeed, if you only knew what I know!" This conversion of suspense to dramatic irony is a great way to use the third-person omniscient point of view, in my opinion. It works especially well in Exit West, where our two primary point of view characters would stand to benefit if only they just talked about these things a bit more. And I mean, they do talk about them from time to time, but in nowhere near as forthcoming of a way as they express their inner thoughts on the same topics. This also means that when the two characters are conversing, but not quite expressing themselves clearly or being 100% honest, we as readers again are presented with more dramatic irony. All right, let's try an exercise. Pick a scene from your work in progress, preferably something that features both your main character and their antagonist, or your main character and their love interest, for example. How would the scene change if readers were privy to the thoughts of what is currently the non-perspective character? How would the scene change if each character knew what the other character knew? Thinking about this sort of information economy can help us better understand our characters themselves and also create greater tension for readers who might be wondering the same things. But now, a word of caution. Though after doing this exercise, you may be tempted to revise your manuscript to tease bits of information that are only known to non-perspective characters, be sure to avoid head-hopping if you're writing in the first, second, or third-person limited perspective. If you're unfamiliar with head-hopping, we'll cover it next, so stay tuned. After listening to the last few minutes, some may feel as though the approach Mohsin Hamid takes in Exit West sounds an awful lot like a third-person limited perspective with chronic head-hopping, which, as anyone who's ever hired me as an editor or talked shop with me more generally knows, is one of our big do-not-dos in narrative storytelling. So why does Mohsin Hamid get a pass? Well, before we answer that question, let's examine head-hopping directly in order to ensure we're in agreement on what exactly it is. Imagine for a moment we're reading a spy thriller that follows our favorite special agent from one high-flying action scene to the next. We're with her the whole time, only knowing what she knows and feeling what she feels. Then, somewhere around page 100, she's having a standoff with one of the bad guys. Before the battle begins, the author leaves us with a sentence like, "The evil henchman knew that Agent Leona was unarmed." Wait, what? How does the henchman know this? How do we as readers know that the henchman knows this? Well, readers now know because the author decided to hop into the henchman's head for a moment and tell readers. Now, imagine instead that the sentence is rewritten to something like the following example. The evil henchman's eyes landed on her hip, her empty holster. In this example, we now get the same information, but remain with our perspective character and her observations of the scene, rather than having the author cast themselves forcefully onto the page for a moment to make sure readers get some extra suspense. Where Exit West is concerned, I feel that despite the ability to visit any character at any time, we're not dealing with head-hopping because what would otherwise be hops are established as part of the storytelling from the book's very first pages. In other words, we're talking about precedent. Mohsin Hamid also makes the incredible storytelling choice to, at times, leave our two main characters to travel halfway around the world for brief anecdotes about how the lives of others are changed by these doors that suddenly let people visit another part of the planet simply by walking through them. Now, this is, admittedly, something else I would have flagged as an editor if I were reading with a critical eye, and it was something I felt a little off about until I let the writing style wash over me. But the reason I was able to look past this device is because of how this and the perspective changes were employed, namely, voice. Voice is one of those tricky things to define. You know it when you read it, but until you have an example of it thrown into your face, it's tough to put it into words on its own. With that in mind, let's use a few examples to try to tease out what I mean when I refer to voice. To do so, we'll compare snippets from the opening pages of The Great Gatsby and my two forthcoming novels, Accounting for It All and Empathy, Imminent Dawn. When listening to each passage, try to focus on the elements that, when put together, add up to creating a distinct voice on the page. Those being word choice, sentence structure, the attitudes and beliefs of the narrator, what details the narrator chooses to focus on, and so on. The list could continue from there, but that should provide a solid starting point. We'll begin first with this snippet from the first page of F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby. In my younger and more vulnerable years, my father gave me some advice that I've been turning over in my mind ever since. "Whenever you feel like criticizing anyone," he told me, "just remember that all people in this world haven't had the advantages that you've had." He didn't say any more, but we've always been usually communicative in a reserved way, and I understood that he meant a great deal more than that. In consequence, I'm inclined to reserve all judgments, a habit that has opened up many curious natures to me and also made me the victim of not a few veteran bores. Those are the first paragraphs of The Great Gatsby, which I feel already give us a strong sense of who our narrator, Nick Carraway, happens to be. Let's compare his voice now to that of the protagonist in my novel Accounting for It All, which will debut with Nine Star Press in November 2018. "Thursdays are my favorite days at Pornucopia. For starters, it's payday, and seconds, it's in-house filming day, which means after a whole week of waiting, I finally get to work as a talent consultant again. But it's the simplest of things that make Thursdays the best of days, and there isn't anything more predictable than the Thursday morning safe looting operation. Before I make it to the safe, though, I stop in the doorframe of Jerry's office for our routine Thursday conversation. Morning, Jer. We're still doing this, huh? He says it with a grin, so I know he doesn't mind my teasing. I'm betting we only have a few thousand in the safe this week. Still want me to..." Jerry throws his hands up, pretending to look all exasperated as his double chin wobbles around. always go to the bank. Every Thursday. No matter how much or how little is in there, always go to the bank. I repeat, always go to the bank with him as he says it for the second time. Right. How could I forget? Never forget. I won't, I say, and I never have. Notice the difference in word choice, the presentation of other characters, and the general rhythm of the prose itself varies from that of Carraway's narration in Gatsby, all of which is part of the voice on the page. Let's do one final excerpt for comparison, this one taken from the first page of Empathy Imminent Dawn, which will debut in January of 2019 from Nine Star Press. Chandra didn't kill her wife, but she may as well have. Now, as Chandra herself struggled against the darkness, against the paralysis that gripped her, she accepted no punishment was more fitting than the one that seemed to have found her on the far side of her install procedure. "That's what I heard," said a man's voice, quiet but tense. "Comas, seizures, electrocution, all of that." Chandra's pulse blared white-hot in her ears, her throat. She tried to wiggle a finger, but it remained still. "No way," a different man responded. His voice thick, Chandra imagined him to be much larger than the first man who spoke. "If there were patients not waking up after the procedure..." "Do you really think Hellman would care?" said the first man. "I mean, really, think about it. Would Wyatt Hellman really put an end to this study over a couple of schmucks like you and me going brain dead after our installs?" Brain dead. Chandra would have shivered were she able. But she couldn't be brain dead, no. She could hear, understand. Her wife, for all Chandra knew, was no longer capable of even that. Deaf even to Chandra's whispers of apology. In that selection, you'll notice the tempo, the sense of urgency, both vary tremendously from the selections that preceded it, all of which can clearly affect a reader's understanding and enjoyment of any given story. Writers whose characters are able to set themselves apart from the writing of others through the use of voice can help readers identify more thoroughly with the protagonist and their world, which is, of course, always a plus. Now that we've teased out what voice is and how it can, and should, differ from story to story, let's examine the voice that Mohsin Hamid employs in Exit West, specifically focusing on how the voice used helps quell any concerns related to possible head-hopping. In Exit West, the voice has an almost epic, biblical feel to it. Admittedly, this read a bit stiffly for me when I first started reading. That is, until I appreciated the complexity injected into it through the use of what I'll call a sort of zoom feature. This zoom allows readers to begin a sentence feeling rather distant from any given character, seeing the goings-on in the neighborhood or on the far side of the planet, before winding its way toward a character's inner thoughts and feelings more closely over the course of the sentence. Conversely, we were also presented with sentences where we could begin zoomed in on a specific character, then slowly zoom out, then zoom into another character, completing the head hop, but doing so in a graceful, one thing leads to another sort of way. Here's an example. There was no physical violence in Nadia's home, and much giving to charity, but when after finishing university, Nadia announced, to her family's utter horror, and to her own surprise, for she had not planned to say it, that she was moving out on her own, an unmarried woman, the break involved hard words on all sides, from her father, from her mother, even more so from her sister, and perhaps most of all from Nadia herself, such that Nadia and her family both considered her thereafter to be without a family, something all of them, all four, for the rest of their lives regretted, but which none of them would ever act to repair, partly out of stubbornness, partly out of bafflement at how to go about doing so, and partly because the impending descent of their city into the abyss would come before they realized that they had lost the chance. There's no way that's one sentence, right? Well, I promise you it is, and this isn't even the longest of the book. But where that zoom feature in that sentence is concerned, well, let's take a look at how that focus changes over the course of that sentence, sliding gracefully from one focus point to the next. First, we began with Nadia's home, more generally, before we slid into Nadia's family's reaction to her announcement. Then we shifted to Nadia's own reaction to her announcement, followed by the implications of her announcement, and then lastly, the interpretations of the implications of her announcement. This could be broken down even further, but the point is this. We do have head hops and commentary on events not yet come to pass where the linear presentation of the narrative is concerned, but all of that works here, in my opinion at least, because the narrative voice moves from one idea to the next through the use of proximity in presentation and the richness with which it allows us to further appreciate the import of what could otherwise have been just another family argument. The context that the voice provides, namely that any argument can change the course of time or be the last that any group of people has, is truly devastating, especially once pit against the action of the narrative as it advances. Let's try another exercise. Imagine one of your characters. Now, imagine them as being from a different background than the one they currently have. Think along the lines of where they're from, their socioeconomic status, the people they grew up alongside of, and how those individuals might have affected their manner of speaking, the metaphors they employ, and their worldview more generally. Now write a scene from the perspective of this character that now has a slightly different background than your original. How does their presentation of events change? What different mannerisms, words, and interpretations of events do they provide? Now, another word of caution on this exercise. When giving it a shot, try to push yourself past stereotypified interpretations of voice, especially if writing a character of a significantly different background than your own. Remember, we are writing characters, not caricatures, and it's critically important we examine and challenge our own, oftentimes innate, biases from time to time in order to do so. All right, that wraps it up for this Biblio breakdown of Mohsin Hamid's Exit West. I hope you learned something or at least feel like you can tackle your own writing or reading from a fresh perspective. If you have feedback on this episode, I'd sincerely love to hear it, so please email me at writescast@gmail.com or tweet me at writescast or at @IamRRCampbell on Twitter. I'd love to incorporate your feedback into my vision for this spin-off series as I begin to work on more episodes over time. If you want a recap of this episode without listening to it again, you can find most of this episode's contents over at rrcampbellwrites.com/bibliobreakdown, where I also have other blog versions of Biblio Breakdowns for other books available. Again, that URL is rrcampbellwrites.com/bibliobreakdown. I'd love to see you there. Thanks for listening. As always, I need to extend a major word of thanks to Kristen Oakley, whose support of the WritesCast Network at $3 per episode through patreon.com/WritesCast is a major boon in helping the WritesCast Network become self-sustaining. In exchange for her patronage, Kristen gets some great rewards, some of which are available to patrons who pledge at $1 or $2 per episode as well. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a contributing member to the WritesCast Network of podcasts, you can head to patreon.com/WritesCast today. Thanks again for tuning in. I hope you'll be back next time. In the meantime, write on and write well.